Hello. Yes, I am from this weird place called Manchester. Manchester people in the house? In the house. You shouldn't actually say things like in the house when you're over 40, so I apologise for that. My wife would think this is a very ironic title for my talk, because I'm a raging disaster in the kitchen. Only on Sunday, she said to me, right, I'm just going... Can everyone hear me okay, by the way? Yeah, cool. Right, so she said to me, right, I'm just going upstairs, just put the bacon on. Right, no problem. So, bacon on, put it in. She comes back down like 10 minutes later, says, what's burning? I said, oh, didn't know. The room is now filled with smoke, and I'm in the room. And said, oh, I didn't know. She says, God, you are special needs in the kitchen. Can you say that? I don't know, is that politically correct these days? I don't know. But and I said, well, I was kind of on my iPad. Didn't really notice. So luckily, the bacon was okay, in case you're wondering. It was fine. I don't know what she was worrying about. This is kind of a metaphor for, I guess, I don't know if it's a process or a kind of rules or ethos, I'm not really sure. But basically, this is mainly for me to try and be a better designer, if indeed that's what I am. I guess I just tend to make things. So I'm going to take you through this thing, and hopefully it might make a little bit of sense. And hopefully you'll see a lot of correlations with what Marty just said, which is great for me. In fact, I probably don't need to do my talk because it was pretty much very similar to Marty's, only his was a billion times better. So, bastard. Right, so... the boil... I've got animations and shit, it's good. The boil stage is where you kind of... what we all do, we collect things. And I've got this theory that in order to have better output, you need more inputs. So what we do, we go around and we collect lots of stuff. And we see all these things around us and we collect these things and we don't really know what we're going to use them for. And then we keep adding new things to the mix and some things we become attracted to, and some things are going to be used in projects and other things are not. But it's really, really important. The whole point of this phase is to fill your head with stuff and collect things. So that can be points from a brief, or it can just be general things, stuff you see in real life that just fascinate you or think you think you're going to use in a future project. So I always go on about these guys, and I make no apology for it. I use them all the time in lectures, because for me, as a designer, I aspire to be like them. I don't aspire to wear a dress, but I do aspire to be like this, because to me, these are probably the greatest designers that have ever walked the face of the earth. This is Ray and Charles Eames. Ray Eames there, and Charles Eames there. And if it always fascinates me that, you know, I mention Eames and some people still don't, oh, who are they, sort of thing. Charles Eames kind of changed the way America sat down, I guess. And he made these amazing chairs. But they also were very prolific in other fields. So they did films and architecture and interior design and toys. And what I love about them is the inherent joy in the process of making. And you see as well that what I love about this photo is two things. But the first thing is, apart from the guy on the left, who's probably an intern and thinks he's cool as shit, that everyone... not that all interns are like that, by the way. But is they're smiling. Hang on a minute, designers aren't supposed to smile. We're supposed to wear black polo necks and, you know, look really serious. But they're smiling, and there's a joy beaming out of them of wanting to make stuff, and a love of the craft and a love of what they do. And the other thing I love about this photo is, of course, that they're all holding cameras. And this is, you know, 1950s. And, you know, so because they were constantly collecting things. Now, this is in the 50s, where collecting stuff back then was actually harder than us now. So we all now have, it's kind of so easy for us to collect things because we have several ways to do it. One is, of course, on these devices. Now, I see these, I don't really see these as a phone. I'm not just talking about iPhones, but anything that has a camera, anything that has a visual collection device or anything like that. I don't see them as a phone. And it's interesting that I think what I love about these kind of things is that the lack of affordance in product design in this, because this is a piece of plastic and glass and rubber, and it's not actually a phone. You know, you can't actually tell that's a phone. It becomes something else through software. So for us as designers and people in this room and making this kind of stuff, that's quite magical, because we can transform this into anything we want it to be. As long as it doesn't have flash on it, of course. So that's amazing. We don't have to worry about the hardware side. We can take this thing and mutate it into something beautiful. But of course, the other side is that, yeah, it's a collection device. So that's what I do. I use this to collect. I don't really take many phone calls, but then I don't have many friends. And then the other side, you know, but here's the thing for me is that I see this very much as analog. And I think it's because I hold it in my hand. It's weird. And it's as analog to me as I've got a rabbit in my pocket next. It's great. It's, you know, this thing, you know, I use these Field notebooks that are made by Draplin and Kudal in the States. And I really like them because, one, they fit in my pocket. Plus, Jim Kudal's a friend of mine, so anything to support him. But I love, these to me are the same. And they're actually, you know, similar in size and stuff. But that's obviously an analog thing. But to me, this is an analog thing. So I carry those two things around. And I prefer to write in this one and jot things down very quickly, because I still find this not great for making notes. And I like the mistakes that are inherent in this. So those to me are my main collection devices. Now, of course, what are you collecting? It's no good just collecting stuff. What we need to do is apply a thing called good taste. And good taste separates good designers from crap designers. And if you haven't got good taste, then you shouldn't be a designer, to be honest. But so bad taste to me is, for example, my sister-in-law recently had her sister-in-law come visit from South Africa. This isn't being videoed, by the way, is it? So I'll tell this story, because if she sees this online, she'll kill me. But this happened on Sunday. So she came to visit from South Africa. Now, previously, these relatives had brought this as a present, in inverted commas. It was a fruit bowl, and on the outer edge was a cheetah made of silver. So when the relatives came, what do? You get this, like, minging bowl, and you have to put it out. I mean, I don't care, but she was, you know, she's a lot nicer than I am. So she put this bowl out, and of course they came, and said, "Oh, you're using the fruit bowl, fantastic." So, well, we've got a surprise for you. And she brought out, it's basically a milk jug with a cheetah as the handle. It's a matching thing. And I said, well, and she was, so I was crying laughing when I saw it. And I said, it just made my night. And then they're going, yeah, but, you know, it's quite expensive. It's really expensive. So I don't care. It's just bad taste. You know, expense has nothing to do with taste, as we all know. So we need to kind of filter those things out. But it's nice to come across them because they are really bloody funny. So the kind of things that I collect, and I try and have lots of disparate things, and I try and come across and bump into things that I wouldn't normally come across. And so I try and all the time I'm trying to improve in what I do and have a wider scope of influence. But one of the things I love is film. And I think film and the grammar of film and the grammar of cinema has more to do with interaction design than pretty much any other medium because of this thing called time. Now, one of the things I like to do is obviously, you know, collect, and we all do this, we collect these visuals and we don't know ever know what we're going to do with them, but they're just there as this thing to sort of inspire ideas and lots of eclectic stuff. But I also like, I watch a lot of films, and that's kind of my thing. But what's interesting for me is when you pause a film. So you're watching a film. It's like looking at a film in a different way. And I'm not encouraging people to become a theorist of film, because they're really boring bastards. I've met them, right? And I don't know what they're talking about. I just enjoy the film, you know. So, but when you actually take time and pause and look at this stuff that's just passing you by very, very quickly, you start to see remarkable things in things that are beautifully, beautifully crafted. So, and things like this. And I think this is amazing. And then these shots last about a second each. And for me, they are one of the most beautiful pieces of design I've seen. An amazing piece of data visualization because it's actually telling a story. So this is from Sidney Pollack's Yakuza, which is a fantastic film. And Yakuza is about balance, and it's about paying your dues and respecting other people and East meets West and all this kind of stuff. So, and it is summed up absolutely in the shot in a visual way. And I just find that fascinating that someone has art directed this to this degree and directed it in the... And it, how many people would, I don't know how many people would notice, because it just goes like that. But it's completely beautiful because here you've got Robert Mitchum from the West, and here's the electric light on the right-hand side. And then balance with that and the symmetry of that. And then you've got the light coming in that might be natural light. So it sort of signifies East meets West and the balance between these two characters. And it's a shot in a film that lasts 2 seconds, if that. But it's telling a story through that. And then throughout the film itself, there is this thing, the symmetry. The symmetry exists throughout this film, all the way through it. And symmetry is one of the most important things within design, I think. To make something beautiful, just you often can just make it symmetrical and it already improves itself. So I love these shots, and you can see the symmetry that's going on. And this scene is a very, very much sort of influences the Kill Bill fight scene as a sort of side note. But again, very beautiful, very well designed, beautifully art directed, and it's a movie. So that's the kind of things that I get off. So then it's like, you've got all this stuff, then what do we do with it? So it's kind of like the simmer process is... Now, when I say this boil, simmer, reduce thing, I'm not thinking about it in my brain. I go, okay, day two, we'll go to simmer. I mean, we don't... You know, the people I work with, they go, what the fuck is he talking about? You know, he's never mentioned this. You know, this is all, like, in my head. But... And also, it's not like a linear thing. You don't really move from one to the other like that, but it all sort of happens at the same time. But simmer for me is very much about consideration, considering context and considering other people's views, apparently. So you have all these ideas and you have all these things that you've collected and you put them together to create a thing. And the idea of this part of the process is very much about play. So to demonstrate that, I've just done a little thing. So we've got this thing and we think it's going to be one thing, but then we have things like opinions and people's opinions. So we can start to push this thing around and make new shapes, play around with this. And this The idea is this is a very playful part of the process. And at no point am I worrying about technicalities or whether things can be done at all. We're just playing with things here, pushing things around. And so this could be, you know, like how do we consider context, which we'll talk about more in a minute. This could be, you know, what happens when we add a feature. And this could be, you know, someone else comes in and this might be, you know, the CEO, and he comes crashing in and he goes, oh, shit. And it's like, you know, and, you know, and he's just, okay, now we've got this new thing, what are we going to do with it? So this sort of demonstrates, I guess, that process. That, and then the other thing to bear in mind here is that at no point during this has anyone died at all. Unless you're making, I don't know, something to do with the fourth bridge and someone's fallen off, then yeah, people might die. But that's the thing that always amazes me, that we should be playing with this stuff a lot more than we are, I think, because no one's going to die. The worst that can happen is your computer blows up. Big deal, buy another computer. They're cheap. And we can play around with this stuff a lot more than we do. There are no rules. There really are no rules. And that whole thing, you need to know the rules to break the rules. I don't really believe that. I don't think you even have to know the rules. You just get in there and play with this thing. And you get more interesting things because of it. And as I mentioned before, it's also about, one of the biggest considerations is the idea of context. My favorite phrase I read in an architectural book was, context is really important. So when you're designing a door handle, you have to consider the door. When you design a door, you have to consider the room. When you can design a room, you consider the building. So you consider the bigger space. And so within interaction design, it's equally as important within any kind of design. So when we were doing, this is a project we did with these Microsoft Surface tables. So, which was kind of interesting for us. We'd never worked on Microsoft Surface, and we had, I think, 6 weeks from getting briefed to actually putting this installation in. So this is the visitor center in Manchester. And we do get visitors. when they try and avoid the rain. And there's an interesting point here, I guess, as well. And I think clients get slagged off a lot within our industry, within, you know, generally, you know, clients, oh, bloody hell. This business would be great if we didn't have clients, and, you know, well, they pay the wages, even though there are new business models where you don't really need clients anymore. But when you have good clients who actually want to go on an adventure with you, that's, for me, when you get really beautiful work and really amazing work. It's kind of that, the opening scene of Bonnie and Clyde. Okay, so I digress here, but it is relevant. So Bonnie and Clyde, and the original one, and what's interesting about that is how Clyde Barrow was this bad boy, but he wasn't quite, he was sort of a bit of a talker. And, you know, he had the big gun, and it's very phallic and blah, blah, blah. And then he meets Bonnie Parker, and she sort of ebbs him on to rob a bank. And then all shit breaks loose, yeah? And without those two things coming together, though they would not have been Bonnie and Clyde. So for me, you know, finding clients like that who's kind of push you and that we push them, then, you know, all kind of interesting stuff starts to happen. So risk needs a partner, is what I'm trying to say. So we had a wonderful client in marketing Manchester. And he said, you know, Drew Stokes, who's the head of marketing Manchester, who's this great guy, and he wants to do visionary stuff. And he said, we're going to do a new visitor center, but we want it to look like an Apple shop. We don't want, like, a counter with lots of people behind it, just, like, you know, being miserable, who are nice people, by the way, but, you know, they'll sit there and, you know, stare out at this expanse. So there's no desks or anything like that. So I thought, God, this is cool. You know, if they pull this off, this could look like a really amazing space. And then he said, we've also got 3 Microsoft Surface tables. Just bought them. Don't know what to do with them. It's like, oh, great. So he said, yeah, could you make something for it? Right, okay. So we did this thing. Now, the thing we had to consider was the context, because if you're in Manchester or any place going to find information, you're lost or you need to find something out about a city, your immediate thing, you're not thinking, I need to go to that visitor center to interact with this amazing piece of technology. You're not thinking that. You're thinking, where the hell is this theater? Or where can I get a good hotel room at a good rate? That's what you're thinking. And also, the age group is massive. You know, you've got people, you know, kids in there right through to pensioners and, you know, people in the 90s, whatever. So whatever we made had to be very simple. Now, one of the things that is good about the grammar of interaction design these days that we're all kind of used to, even the older generation, and getting used to this kind of stuff, is the idea of touch screens and enlarging things and all these pinch gestures and stuff. But there's a problem with that in that it's not got the wow factor. You know, people have gone, you know, these things are freaking magical. But, you know, we go, whatever. You know, remember when you first saw this? Remember when you saw something for the first time? You know, and it's like, wow! An hour later, whatever. Whatever, dude. You know, it's like, it just amazes me how complacent we get. I get complacent about this stuff, and we get very complacent about it very, very quickly. But, you know, things like this are magical. So how do you deal with that malaise? Well, because you want to make something that is still got surprise and delight. But hang on, we haven't got, the budget is not amazing. We haven't got like £1 billion here, and we've got 6 weeks. So how do we do that? So when we were meeting with the guys who were going to code this thing, who were like experts in Surface development, they were taking us through it, and they said, well, we've got these tags that you can put on the bottom of objects, and we can detect what that object is. And we were all right, that's cool. And then he said, you can rotate it. And it detects rotation. And both me and Adam, our senior interactive designer, we both went, ooh. And then, and the guys who were coding, they didn't really, you know, they're not really interested in that kind of stuff. But for us, we saw, suddenly it was like, hang on a minute. Because what we can do, we can turn that, we can add a concept onto that. And it can be, let's put these objects on there. And when you turn them, it's like a giant volume control. Because we can detect rotation. That's super duper easy. So what we did, you put these objects on the table there, and these objects, you know, we just found someone who can make these plastic things. We then got stickers made because we didn't have the budget to get them engraved and all this kind of stuff. And then you basically turn these objects to increase the proximity of the kind of stuff that you want to look at. So, and you can move them around, and you can have like 10 things on there, and 4 people can use it. Again, context. It's no good. When we were testing it, you know, you'd be like one person at a time. But the reality is, in this place, there'd be like 10 people on the thing. So you have to test it like that. And, you know, we kept crashing it, and, you know, it was crazy. And we had like 8 arms on it. And that's the reality that you have to deal with, and that's why you have to consider the context. And the other thing was that because you had this thing that was different, and it's sort of, you think, why are those things at the side? And then I drop it, right, let's, you know what I'm going to do? I don't think anyone's going to die. I'm going to drop that thing on the table, and it goes boosh, and it, this thing appears. And you go, wow. And then there's no, and then I had an absolute fit. I was away when it launched, and the client was like, I think we need to put instructions. So I have this big teddy that I threw out my cot. And I said, no way. He said, I don't want anything to do with this project if there's any instructions on this thing. So what happens then is we have people who then take my rant and then have to be the middleman between me and the client. and go, well, maybe we should kind of compromise. And so we have this little plastic thing that tells you what to do on the side, because I didn't want anything on screen. So you know what? No one ever reads it, ever. And the other thing is that, just as a side note, you know, it's in Manchester Piccadilly, right? So who knows Piccadilly Gardens? Right, okay. Scumbags. Right, so... Well, I can walk. My office is like 10 minutes from Piccadilly Gardens, and I did this very simple graph that was the amount of scallies increases the more you go towards Piccadilly Gardens. That's just my opinion, but you know. So, but lots of footfall, it's in the centre of it. And everyone was like, right, we've got to have like 300 of these objects because they're just going to get stolen. Why anyone want to steal a plastic thing with hotels on, I don't know, but people do steal this stuff. And you know how many have been stolen? None. Because, I think because it's a very beautiful space, they respect it. So, you know, good design can bring out good behaviour in people, I think. But again, it's all about the context. So, within all that, probably the most important part of this is about reduced... Bless you, what was that? is about reduction. And there's that the famous phrase, you know when a design is finished when there's nothing left to take away. And that is absolutely the kind of goal that I'm trying to reach in the design that I do and the design that the team do. It's about simplicity. And it's about, you know, the more you remove stuff, the more your product shines through. So, but what traditionally happens? So here's our perfect thing. You don't get much more perfect than a circle. But what happens is that, as we were saying before, you know, right, what we need is more features. Because more features make better products, yeah? This is basically the Nokia model, by the way. Joking. So what you do, you know, yeah, let's add a feature. Right, okay. Well, no, it's still all right. You know, it's still kind of, you know, it's still a circle. Right, Dave from marketing said, could we put this in, you know, and can we put this in as well? Yeah, and how about this? Yeah, and you're like, oh, shit. Right, so this is the reality of, like, adding things to a design is suddenly it becomes ugly. But hey, we've got more features. More features obviously means it's better, surely, doesn't it? We need to update all the time and new versions, and that's what we want. No. What we need to get to is removing things. So, you know, you start... The idea is take things away. I always remove... Whenever I'm reviewing stuff, and it's sort of ingrained in our company within the team, but it's like... Justify every single thing on that screen. Now, that doesn't mean it has to be useful, because we have to redefine what useful is. So useful can be, you know, if it makes you smile and you don't know why, then that's a good thing. So for me, I always use this example, and I haven't got it on screen, but, you know, everyone with an iPhone, you can do this yourself. It's a lot of fun. It's my favorite feature of the iPhone. And you're going to be amazed. So, and if you've got your iPhone, you can try it. And it's, why does it do that? There's nothing behind there. I've looked. Right? Nothing. Right? Bounces. It's nice. You know what it is? Kind of nice. And it's actually telling you, it's communicating something as well. It's going, there ain't nothing left up there, dude. Again, a 40-year-old man or over shouldn't say the word dude, but, you know, that's the best thing about the iPhone. That thing, that is why the iPhone, sorry, it's a bit suggestive, that is why the iPhone is the iPhone and why Android is Android, because it's a freaking engineer's phone, the other one, sorry, but this one's made for human beings. We're human beings, by the way. I do have a lot of respect for engineers, by the way, but... So it's those things, the subtleties, the things in between, the things that go unnoticed until you notice them, Those are the things that we should be putting more into our designs. So now, you could argue, but surely that is something you want to take away. But I would argue not, because that is actually adding, it is adding to the design, and it's what, that is what makes a brand go from being just a thing you use to something you actually love. Because it's these things. That's what love is. It's the indescribable things. And you can't quite put your finger on it, but it just resonates with you in an emotional way. So generally you wanna do this and remove crap. And so for me, I've been doing this 15 years, not this talk, it may seem like that, but how are we doing on time, by the way? So 10 minutes, good. So I just want to end with probably my, I don't know if this is my pet sounds. Maybe it's all over after this for me. But I started when I started in the industry, I was a kind of programmer, did JavaScript and web design. And here's what I find really, really, really exciting for all of us within this industry now. And I use the industry of design, I guess. Is that we can make anything we want to make. I was crap at woodwork. Weirdly, I never did metalwork. I did embroidery. All my mates were doing metalwork, I was sewing things. I don't know what was going on there, but I did woodwork, and I was really bad at woodwork. And it took me like a term to make a mortise and tenon joint. Nowadays, I can upload a PSD, and it's laser cut, and I get a beautiful thing back. Results. I'm now a woodwork master. So, and it's through technology and through these opportunities that the net and the world and all these things that gives us. So much so that when you have an idea, you can just go, well, let's make it ourselves, because that's what we can do. We can make things. So this is probably the best thing that I've ever made. And I'm using I in the royal sense. So there's lots of people made this happen. But and it's born out of, I think the best things that you make are often the things that solve problems for you. So, and this is the case with this. So I was coming home on the, from London one day, and on the train trying to watch a film on my iPhone, and I was trying to prop it up on my bag. And I just thought, you know, there's got to be a better way. I didn't have one of those GorillaPod things, which I think are cool. But, you know, I didn't have one in my bag, and I wanted something without movable parts that was put in my pocket or put in my bag, and it would just be there, and it would be almost invisible and cheap, really cheap. So I went home that night and made one out of cardboard, and I was just going to make one for myself out of wood, you know, using this like Pinoco or some Pinoco.com. You can cut things out of all sorts of crazy stuff, and it's amazing. So I was just going to do it myself. And then again, it's that thing of not working in a vacuum. Creativity abhors a vacuum. I've learned this. It's not good for your ego because you think you know it all, right? I just want to make stuff on my own. Fuck off. You know, but actually, you don't, that's the worst thing that can happen. As long as the person you're working with, you respect and they respect you, and, you know, they've got talent and good taste. Good taste, really important. Wearing the shirt, you might not think so. But So Louise, our MD, she said, I think, you know, people might want to buy that. So we said, well, let's see if we can make it. And we didn't know anything about industrial design. We didn't know anything about plastics. And you know what? You find those people. You do research. You find all this stuff. After collecting these things and doing all these considerations, you find people to solve these problems. And we don't even have CAD software at our place. So we get sent over some stuff. We can't even view the thing. So they have to send it in an executable that we can move around. But, you know, we don't need to know that stuff. And so what I guess is interesting with this, and now there's an iPad one, and the other thing to say is this is not perfect. This is like, you know, the first version that we will constantly iterate. And a big part of that process is iteration. So here's the history of the product. And I want to, and I guess it kind of sums up the idea of reduction. So there's the little cardboard one I made. one night. And then, so I brought this in and we were talking about it. And one of the guys said, let's make it so you can wrap your headphones around it as well. It's like a dual thing. So we cut. You can see our very sophisticated prototyping skills at work here. But it doesn't matter. You're just making stuff, and you're making stuff to criticize, and you're making stuff that irritates you. You just let it sit there and irritate you. That's fine. It's cool. So we put notches in it. And then I was like, you know what? I don't really want it to be. I want it to be a thing that holds your iPhone at an angle. That's it. I don't want it to do anything else. I don't want it to be a headphone holder or, you know, do your washing or whatever. I don't want it to do any of that. I want it to be very, very, very simple. One, single-minded and does one thing but does it well. So then we went through. You can see all these, like, fat boys, like, what the hell happened here? You know, it's like supersize this thing. And then we made it out of plastic and, you know, we just like with a bandsaw. And then we started to get tools made and prototypes made. Now, the one that is interesting, and I hope you can see that properly, is the black one, four from the end. Now, it's very similar to the end product, the yellow one. But there is a major difference. We looked at it and thought, all right, this is nearly it. This is kind of cool. But something about it, it's a little bit ugly. And we don't really know why. So what we did, I'm always collecting things about mathematics and you know, there's things like the golden ratio I'm fascinated by. So we applied the golden rectangle to the product. So the relationship between the top bit and the bottom bit is a golden rectangle. And suddenly, you know, Da Vinci was like, he was right. Who knew? So, you know, the black one is only slightly different, but it's kind of just, it was all a bit arbitrary. So when we applied the golden rectangle, you get a product which, for some reason, just looks a bit better. And that is basically applying the idea of nature. So, and then, ideally, I want to get to creating products like this. And I'm always fascinated by things like pencils. It's interesting that Jeremy mentioned a pencil. So I'm a bit of a pencil Nazi. And this is a Dixon Tycon Durego pencil, which you have to order. I couldn't find these. I had to order them off eBay. And I buy packs of these things. And because to me, they are the archetypal pencil, and they're really beautiful. But a pencil's very, very interesting as an object because it's actually very, very complex to make a pencil. It takes a lot of people to make a pencil. And if you look up iPencil, there's an amazing essay about it that's very famous. But what you get is a very simple object that does its stuff really, really well. And it's amazing affordance because you know which end is the writing bit. It's got a bloody arrow on it, pointing. And it's got a built-in progress bar as it goes down. And I'm not joking. But you know, the other thing that really fascinates me, this, and this is the kind of stuff that I aspire to make and to be as good as, and I don't know if I'll ever get to that, but this is why I looked at this thing, is that you can chop it up into several parts and it still is them several pencils. That's like, that like blows my mind because I don't know many objects that can do that. Barcodes is the other one. Barcodes are like genius because you can cut them in bits and it's still, as long as, you know, horizontally, and it's still barcodes. Amazing. So a pencil's kind of like that. It's kind of like this built-in fractal. So for me, I try and aspire to make something as beautiful as these kind of objects. Using that process hopefully kind of helps. And ultimately, though, I think, we, as designers in this room, we have a responsibility now to not just reduce to make a better product, but actually reduce the amount of products we are making and make less, but make them more beautiful and more exquisite instead of putting more crap in the world because there is enough crap in this world. And that's it. Thank you very much.